This is Audible.
Macmillan Audio presents Zoe's Tale by John Scalzi. Read for you by Tavia Gilbert. 14. No, you're still too low, I said to Gretchen. It's making you flat. You need to be a note higher or something, like this. I sang the part I wanted her to sing. I am singing that, Gretchen said. No, you're singing lower than that, I said. Then you're singing the wrong note, Gretchen said, because I'm singing the note you're singing. Go ahead, sing it. I cleared my throat and sang the note I wanted her to sing. She matched it perfectly. I stopped singing and listened to Gretchen. She was flat. Well, nuts, I said. I told you, Gretchen said. If I could pull up the song for you, you could hear the note and sing it, I said.
If you could pull up the song, we wouldn't be trying to sing it at all, Gretchen said. We'd just listen to it like civilized human beings.
Good point, I said.
There's nothing good about it, Gretchen said. I swear to you, Zoe, I knew coming to a colony world was going to be hard. I was ready for that. But if I knew they were going to take away my PDA, I might have just stayed back on Erie. Go ahead, call me shallow.
Shallow, I said.
Now tell me I'm wrong, Gretchen said. I dare you.
I didn't tell her she was wrong. I knew how she felt. Yes, it was shallow to admit that you missed your PDA, but when you'd spent your whole life able to call up everything you wanted to amuse you on a PDA, music, shows, books, and friends, when you had to part with it, it made you miserable. Really miserable. Like trapped on a desert island with nothing but coconuts to bang together miserable. Because there was nothing to replace it with. Yes, the colonial Mennonites had brought their own small library of printed books, but most of that consisted of Bibles and agricultural manuals, and a few classics, of which Huckleberry Finn was one of the more recent volumes. As for popular music and entertainments, well, they didn't much truck with that. You could tell a few of the colonial Mennonite teens thought it was funny to watch the rest of us go through entertainment withdrawal. Didn't seem very Christian of them, I have to say. On the other hand, they weren't the ones whose lives had been drastically altered by landing on Roanoke. If I were in their shoes and watching a whole bunch of other people whining and moaning about how horrible it was that their toys were taken away, I might feel a little smug, too. We did what people do in situations where they go without. We adjusted. I hadn't read a book since we landed on Roanoke, but was on the waiting list for a bound copy of The Wizard of Oz. There were no recorded shows or entertainments, but Shakespeare never fails. There was a Reader's Theater performance of Twelfth Night planned for a week from Sunday. It promised to be fairly gruesome. I'd heard some of the read-throughs, but Enzo was reading the part of Sebastian, and he was doing well enough. And truth be told, it would be the first time I would have ever experienced a Shakespeare play, or any play other than a school pageant, live. And it's not like there would be anything else to do anyway. And as for music, well, this is what happened. Within a couple of days of landing, a few of the colonists hauled out guitars and accordions and hand drums and other such instruments and started trying to play together, which went horribly, because nobody knew anyone else's music. It was like what happened on the Magellan. So they started teaching each other their songs, and then people showed up to sing them, and then people showed up to listen. And thus it was, at the very tail end of space, when no one was looking, the colony of Roanoke reinvented the Hootenanny, which is what Dad called it. I told him it was a stupid name for it, and he said he agreed, but said that the other word for it, wingding, was worse. I couldn't argue with that. The Roanoke Hootenanners, as they were now calling themselves, took requests, but only if the person requesting sang the song. And if the musicians didn't know the song, you'd have to sing it at least a couple of times until they could figure out how to fake it. This led to an interesting development. Singers started doing a cappella versions of their favorite songs, first by themselves and increasingly in groups, which might or might not be accompanied by the Hootenanners. It was becoming a point of pride for people to show up with their favorite songs already arranged, so everyone else in the audience didn't have to suffer through a set of dry runs before it was all listenable. It was safe to say that some of these arrangements were more arranged than others, to put it politely, and some folks sang with the same vocal control as a cat in a shower. But now, a couple of months after the Hootenannies had begun, people were beginning to get the hang of it, and people had begun coming to the Hoots with new songs arranged a cappella. One of the most popular songs at the recent Hoots was Let Me Drive the Tractor, the tale of a colonist being taught to drive a manual tractor by a Mennonite who, because they were the only ones who knew how to operate non-computerized farm machinery, had been put in charge of planting crops and teaching the rest of us how to use their equipment. The song ends with the tractor going into a ditch. It was based on a true story. The Mennonites thought the song was pretty funny, even though it came at the cost of a wrecked tractor. Songs about tractors were a long way from what any of us had been listening to before, but then we were a long way from where any of us were before, in any sense, so maybe that fit. And to get all sociological about it, maybe what it meant was that 20 or 50 standard years down the line, whenever the colonial union decided to let us get in contact with the rest of the human race, Roanoke would have its own distinct musical form. Maybe they'll call it Roanoke Appella, or Hootenoke, or something. But at this particular moment, all I was trying to do was to get the right note for Gretchen to sing so she and I could go to the next hoot with a halfway decent version of Delhi Morning for the Hootenanners to pick up on. And I was failing miserably. This is what it feels like when you realize that, despite a song being your favorite of maybe all time, you don't actually know every little nook and cranny of it. And since my copy of the song was on my PDA, which I could no longer use or even had anymore, there was no way to correct this problem. Unless... I have an idea, I said to Gretchen.
Does it involve you learning to sing on key? Gretchen asked.
Even better, I said. 10 minutes later, we were on the other side of Croatoan, standing in front of the village's information center, the one place on the entire planet that you'd still find a functioning piece of electronics, because the inside was designed to completely block any radio or other signals of any sort. The technology to do this, sadly, was rare enough that we only had enough of it for a converted cargo container. The good news was they were making more. The bad news was they were only making enough for a medical bay. Sometimes life stinks. Gretchen and I walked into the receiving area, which was pitch black because of the signal cloaking material. You had to close the outer door to the information center before you could open the inner door. So for about a second and a half, it was like being swallowed by grim, black, featureless death. Not something I'd recommend. And then we opened the inner door and found a geek inside. He looked at the both of us, a little surprised, and then got that no look.
"The answer is no," he said, confirming the look.
"Ah, Mr. Bennett," I said, "you don't even know what we're going to ask."
"Well, let's see," said Jerry Bennett. "Two teenage girls, daughters of the colony leaders, incidentally, just happened to walk into the only place in the colony where one could play with a PDA. Are they here to beg to play with a PDA? Or are they here because they enjoy the company of a chunky middle-aged man? This is not a hard question, Miss Perry."
"We just want to listen to one song," I said. "We'll be out of your hair in just a minute." Bennett sighed.
"You know, at least a couple times a day, someone just like you gets the bright idea to come in here and ask if I could just let them borrow a PDA to watch a movie, or listen to some music, or read a book. And oh, it'll just take a minute. I won't even notice they're there.
And if I say yes, then other people will come in asking for the same time. Eventually, I'll spend so much time helping people with their PDAs that I won't have time to do the work your parents, Miss Perry, have assigned me to do. So you tell me, what should I do?
Get a lock, said Gretchen.
Bennett glanced over to Gretchen, sourly. Very amusing, he said. What are you doing for my parents? I asked. Your parents are having me slowly and painstakingly locate and print every single Colonial Union Administration memo and file so they can refer to them without having to come in here and bother me, Bennett said. In one sense, I appreciate that, but in a more immediate sense, I've been doing it for the last 3 days, and I'm likely to be doing it for another 4. And since the printer I have to work with jams on a regular basis, it does actually require someone to pay attention to it, and that's me. So there you have it, Miss Perry. 4 years of technical education and 20 years of professional work have allowed me to become a printer monkey at the very ass end of space. Truly, my life's goal has been achieved. I shrugged. So let us do it, I said. I beg your pardon, Bennett said. If all you're doing is making sure the printer doesn't jam, that's something we could do for you, I said. We'll work for you for a couple of hours, and in exchange, you let us use a couple of PDAs while we're here, and then you can do whatever else you need to do. Or just go have lunch, Gretchen said. Surprise your wife. Bennett was silent for a minute, considering. Offering to actually help me, he said. No one's tried that tactic before. Very sneaky. We try, I said. And it is lunchtime, Bennett said. And it is just printing. It is, I agreed. I suppose if you mess things up horribly, it won't be too bad for me, Bennett said. Your parents won't punish me for your incompetence. Nepotism working for you, I said.
Not that there will be a problem, Gretchen said.
No, I agreed. We're excellent printer monkeys.
All right,
Bennett said, and reached across his work table to grab his PDA. You can use my PDA. You know how to use this? I gave him a look. Sorry. Okay. He punched up a queue of files on the display. These are files that need to go through today. The printer is there. He motioned to the far end of the work table. And the paper is in that bin. Feed it into the printer, stack the finished documents next to the printer. If it jams, and it will, several times, just yank out the paper and let it auto-feed a new one. It'll automatically reprint the last page it was working on. While you're doing that, you can sync up to the Entertainment Archive. I downloaded all those files into one place. You downloaded everyone's files? I asked, and felt ever so slightly violated. Relax, Bennett said. Only public files are accessible. As long as you encrypted your private files before you turned in your PDA, like you were told to, your secrets are safe. Now, once you access a music file, the speakers will kick on. Don't turn them up too high, or you won't be able to hear the printer jam.
You have speakers already set up? Gretchen asked.
Yes, Miss Trujillo, Bennett said. Believe it or not, even chunky middle-aged men like to listen to music.
I know that, Gretchen said. My dad loves his.
And on that ego-deflating note, I'll be off, Bennett said. I'll be back in a couple of hours. Please don't destroy the place. And if anyone comes in asking if they can borrow a PDA, tell them the answer is no and no exceptions, he said off.